Hello and welcome back to our Blue Cirrus radio show. Our first guest on the radio show is Iris Berman. She's the VP of Telehealth Services at Northwell Health. Northwell Health is New York State's largest healthcare provider and private employer with 23 hospitals and nearly 800 outpatient facilities. Iris has over 30 years of experience as a critical care nurse and a strong commitment to quality care for patients across the healthcare continuum. Telemedicine provides the framework to make this possible, and the use of data analytics is essential to assure accurate tracking of outcomes. And with us tonight, our show sponsor and co-host, Michelle Hager from Blue Cirrus Consulting. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Joe. It's always a pleasure to be with you. And Iris, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight.
It's my pleasure.
Great. Well, thanks for taking the time to speak with us. As the VP of Telehealth Services at a major hospital such as Northwell Health, what has your research focused on and found? What technology is used to help facilitate behavioral health and other services among vulnerable populations?
Well, I think, let's qualify research. There's different types of research. There's qualitative and quantitative. I think there's been a large struggle in the industry as a whole to really figure out what to measure because we need some standardization. So what I measure may look very different than what another institution measures. A lot of what we started with has been qualitative because it's very easy with the technology that exists today for telehealth to ask questions at the end of an encounter with a patient and say, how was your experience? What issues did you have? So it becomes a little bit more subjective, but you learn a lot in terms of consumer behavior and desires. The bigger challenge has been looking at how we do the more quantitative types of studies where we're really measuring outcome. And one of the challenges for telehealth, although it's been around really for probably well over a decade and more, if you really look back at the history of telehealth, is that we have to look at longitudinal measurements, which is something several of us across the country are really actively involved with in other organizations around defining what it is we're trying to measure and how we use our coding information for billing and insurance companies to look at the full outcome and effect, because you have pre-acute and post-acute care to look at if you really want to know impact. And there's a lot of other variables that come into healthcare. It's not clean. It's not just about that single encounter. It's about that patient's entire trip. And when you start looking, and I know we'll talk about this a little bit later, you start looking at complex care. It's not one single encounter by one single specialty. So right now we're working largely on a lot of the definitions and measurements. What is it you want to see come out of an encounter? Does it reduce hospital readmission for the more complex patients, like a heart failure patient, diabetes, those types of things? Did the patient avoid missing a day of work? How do you measure that? Not easy. Again, we're still working on how we get that. We do know, though, that in some of our earlier qualitatives, we are getting some very good response from particular sectors. And it's no news that telehealth has been most successful in the behavioral health sector. And we desperately need that to be really supported. I do believe that our government officials are really recognizing that, both on the state and federal level, and really beginning to support that, which is very exciting.
Yes, you're absolutely right. I think that's reflective in all the laws across the state. And then of course, at the federal level, allowing behavioral health services to be done in a lot of cases from the home, and which was never allowed previously. So I agree completely. But I wanted to clarify something for our listeners who may not know the details around working with a health system and the qualitative data that you have to track. So when we look at a patient's full continuum, so they're all of their visits that they've had, or their entirety of their visit, what are the types of things? What I want them to understand is, from a qualitative perspective, as you said, that's really the volumes around how often did you do a visit? How long was the visit?
Correct.
But then we're getting into, from a patient perspective, you mentioned, CHF patients, but also from a patient experience perspective. Can you speak a little bit about that and what you might be thinking about?
Yeah, I think, you know, like I said, there's downstream impact to being able to have a telehealth visit, for example, in your home or on your lunch break at work, right? And that experience might allow somebody to get care that might not have ordinarily afforded that care. Does it make it more affordable? I'm not sure that you could actually say that, but you could say it's certainly more accessible, provided that you got the technology available to them. And I think more and more employers are looking at that. But when we look at the experiential, I like to tell the story about my son, who is a work-at-home dad, or I'm not a stay-at-home daddy, work-at-home dad, who has two little ones. And about, I would say just prior to the pandemic, he was already experiencing the use of telehealth. His baby daughter, my granddaughter, developed what looked like pink eye or infection in the eye, and he really could not leave the house. Nor did he want to bring her to be exposed to other kids' illnesses in a doctor's office for what he was pretty sure was pretty evident with just one quick look. So he did his telehealth visit through his insurance company. He had a very short wait time, no time away from work. In one quick look and probably a 10-minute encounter and a good history, they determined that, in fact, she did have pink eye. He then phoned his local pharmacy who does delivery. He never left the house, and within 45 minutes, that child was treated. Had he had to do it in the traditional manner, he would have had to take time away from work. Yeah. Could have, for some people, meant lost pay. He didn't have to travel to pick up drugs with a sick kid. And the child wasn't traumatized by the whole thing either. So it was a wonderful experience. And if you think about that and apply that more broadly, and look at it from the standpoint of someone who has multiple issues. Another story about how this can impact people, and it might go to other conversations we have later, is if you have somebody with multiple comorbidities and they have to go to multiple different providers, that's one appointment for every provider. So let's say they need a nutritionist, physical therapy, speech therapy, a cardiologist, a pulmonologist. Just think about somebody who has long-term chronic lung disease. You're talking about 5-6 different encounters, the traveling. What if that person is able to travel on their own? Then it's involvement of the family. So when we leverage the technology, we can actually improve efficiency, really create a true interdisciplinary experience. Those are the kinds of things we've got to start looking at and measuring.
Yep.
And I hope that has answered some of your question.
Oh yeah, that's perfect. And I know Joe has another question for you, but I think that's a perfect point around the interdisciplinary element, because so many of those chronic disease patients have multiple providers in multiple specialties. And very often those are not connected only through the patient. So if we're able to do a telehealth visit and potentially connect all of those providers in a conversation or one or two together, that's better for the patient, much better yeah. patient experience.
We have a great story with a pediatric patient who was a ventilator-dependent child and a mom who had to work but also had home care. And anytime she had to take the child out, it was an ambulette. It was taking an aide with her. It was taking time away from work for herself and the complexities around moving a child that has so many issues. We tried an interdisciplinary telehealth visit. So all of those specialties I mentioned, we had nutrition, we had physical therapy, occupational therapy, I believe, pulmonologist and pediatrician on. And they together formulated a care plan for the next so many days. She didn't have to leave the house. It saved costs in that case because she didn't have to use multiple visits with an ambulance or an ambulance service, which is very expensive. And depending on your plan, may or may not be covered fully. And not having to take off from work. So when you look at those different avenues, that was a win-win, and it was coordinated care. Everyone heard in real time what the other person was planning. And so they could say, well, if you're doing this with pulmonary, then your best time to do this therapy is after this respiratory treatment, let's say, or, you know, coordinating that care. Those are the kinds of things that keep people out of the hospital.
Right.
Right.
That's exactly so right.
Start looking at your recidivism rates related to those that are able to get telehealth ad hoc visits or encounters that are planned that then cause them to avoid having to show up in an ER to manage something that, if managed properly, would not have happened.
That's right. And the emergency rooms are so full. We need to do something to help alleviate that. Sorry, Joe, or Irish and I can talk forever. Go for it.
You too definitely have a lot of experience. And I'm glad you said that, because complex patient interdisciplinary care is improving the cross conversation and using a coordinated care approach with different types of providers for better efficiencies. And that's where telehealth is going. If you allow it, it eliminates too many moves. It makes a sense to use the equipment available to you, and it saves time, it saves lives, it saves money. So you guys would finish this whole radio interview if I didn't stop you. but great answer. Moving on. So Iris, please explain some of the complications around telehealth, billing, complex visits, how to bill for it when everything has been built around face-to-face visits. I'm sure it's not easy to bill.
Well, no, it is not easy. And we really you have to have really experts that follow the coding every day. And I know that Michelle and I know well people that are true experts in the field, and they're connecting all the time. And every day there are emails back and forth between these people trying to determine exactly what was meant by the next iteration of a CPT code, as an example. CPT codes are related to the amount of time for care delivery. How do you know that before you encounter the patient? Because in the real world, you select your code and then you submit it based on your visit. But now we have a new complication, which is the No Surprise Billing Act, right? Which has now put another layer of complexity in there, because you have to be able to let your patient know their approximate financial responsibility, if there is any. Your technology may or may not be set up for that. And depending on that, that's now incumbent on particularly our larger hospitals and healthcare providers to figure out how to notify the public about a potential without necessarily knowing which code they're going to fall into. We've come up with a few different solutions we're piloting. I don't think we've completely figured it out, which is why they're not finding people just yet, because they understand finally the complexity around that. But on top of that, you have the issue of the location of the provider. Just as one, I mean, it's typically always been that the provider was in an office or in a hospital, but now they could be in their home. Does that become a professional location? What address are you using for your O2 location piece? These are all things that people are talking about. Then you've got people who've got no office, you know, that's always been virtual and always from their home. How does that fit into the billing standard? The other argument, which you'll see, is around payment parity. A number of states are moving, thankfully, I'm in New York State, we're finally moving. Our governor has been very supportive of telehealth and is looking and recognizing that just because you're providing a telehealth visit does not mean it's less expensive for the provider to provide that care. There's still think of bricks and mortar going virtual, right? Yep. You still need somebody to run the office. And I'm using air quotes, you can't see me, but the office still has to be run, whether you're in a physical plant or not. That's the record keeping and helping the patient to have a good experience and coordinating how that billing gets sent out, what kind of insurance do they have, making sure that appointments have follow-ups. All of that has to happen. The doctor still has to be covered for malpractice. Yep. They still have to be educated. They have to continue their CPUs. There's really not less cost for that provider to provide that care. And it's really about the provider providing the right care at the right time. Telehealth is just another tool in their bucket. Why should they get paid less for using a newer tool or a tool that might actually improve access for a patient? So that's a big piece of it, right? I mean, the parity has been a big struggle.
Yeah, I agree. It's the improving access. And I would even suggest that there's even another layer of cost that you don't have in an in-person visit, because you would normally come to a brick and mortar location and walk in the door and you'd be greeted by some kind of an office staff or a medical assistant to make sure you've got all your paperwork correct. Well, now we've got to do that through technology. So we've got to purchase a technology solution that we didn't have before. Before, we just talk as, you know, in person in the same space and time. So it's actually additional cost associated with it. So I agree. We're on the same page. We got to put the world to right. hair.
and Jason Goldwater did a great explanation of the environmental improvements, the green factor of telehealth with lowering admissions and carbon monoxide. He did a great job. And we were part of that virtual event for Telemedicine Compliance Congress, that virtual event in January. And we heard you guys speak on that panel with Jason and Dr. Yale Harris. They were great. We've had them before on our show in January with Senator Patrick O'Connor. So we try to group in our legislation here on the show and make them aware of some of the challenges. But your discussion was focused around the best way to collect critical data that tells a story on telehealth costs and advantages. Why is it important to collaborate on collecting and unifying data that can be used to help legislators understand costs and the benefits of a telehealth program long-term?
Well, I think, you know, we've touched on a lot of it. The data dictionary that Yael and Jason originally worked on to get started with a little bit more data deep dive was a big challenge. We found that there was a lot of variability in the way people were using coding because it was unclear. It's important to educate so that we are all using things, and it's not going to ever be exact, but as in similar ways so that we can measure similar outcomes and demonstrate to our government officials the efficacies of telehealth. But also, we need to continue to do more longitudinal studies, and the only way we're going to be able to do that is we've got to start somewhere. We have a tremendous opportunity if we can partner with HHS and with our CMS data is a great example of being able to possibly delve into a little bit more longitudinal outcome. But what we also have to be able to recognize through our research are the different impacts of telehealth, depending on where you live geographically too. One of the interesting things about some of their preliminary, you know, Yael and Jason's research was the variability geographically. And it's interesting because it is more expensive to get care of any kind in the New York metropolitan area. We have primarily downstate coverage. We don't have a lot of rural area. Most of our area that we cover is the metropolitan statistical area or a true city. And so we don't qualify oftentimes for rural program type monies that are being granted by various agencies. We want to demonstrate, though, and this is where that research comes in so handy, is to show that while we may not have less costs because of doctor salaries, locations, you know, just the cost of things in general and living in an area like this, there are savings to be had downstream. And we're not going to be able to demonstrate that if we don't study the full spectrum of care. So looking and how we attach those visits, the pre-hospital, hospital, post-hospital, the well care, and how we can compare to a population maybe that's not using telehealth. This is going to require a number of us to share our data instead of siloing it. And that's, I think, what our biggest challenge is going to be and what we're really working towards in particularly these groups that we've been meeting with. Groups like CTEL really help pull people together to have these and really like think tanks to talk about how we can level set the data and really have some meaningful outcome measurements.
Right, it's so important for the legislators to understand. I think in healthcare, we often don't take the time to stop working and helping people to demonstrate, hey, this is the real complexity of what we're doing from a healthcare perspective, from a cost and quality, you know, data collection and what the data is demonstrating. So it's really important for even our listeners to help their own legislators in their own areas. We know Joe mentioned Senator Patrick O'Connor that's in state senator of Massachusetts, but anywhere in this listening, you know, area, talk to your legislators about healthcare if you're a healthcare provider or any of the in the healthcare career. Let them know, you know, this is important. This is a high cost area. It's important for folks to understand how cost and quality and access all work together.
Yeah, I think it's really important. You bring up another good point related to that is you have many large organizations have government relations departments, and it's very important to have regular check-ins with them and let them know what you're looking at. And advocacy is huge. It's different than lobbying. Advocacy is what you know, I think Michelle and I and others are very involved with. We try to get down to DC and meet with our congressmen and senators, and we also try to impact at the Capitol, even if it's writing and reviewing those bills and going through it with your content experts. Let's say it's related to behavioral health, bringing those people to the table to take a look at the verbiage and does it really work for the kinds of services you believe need to be provided. From a truly objective standpoint, giving examples, giving stories, and this is where Jason and Yael really enjoy having us share experiences and then coalescing that into both qualitative and quantitative measurements around those stories to say, we saved this many dollars, but we also had this great outcome for a patient. That helps illustrate the people that are working on all of these bills to push it forward in the right way.
Yeah, and we heard that at the ATA Edge conference in December down in Washington, and ATA did a great job of inviting senators and congressmen and women to speak about it. And it gave me so much hope for telehealth and pushing it forward and all the support. And so having Senator O'Connor on our radio show, he became like the face of legislators in Massachusetts for telehealth, and he appreciates it. And we introduced him to Kyle Zeppeli, the executive director at ATA. And I said, let's put the two together because ATA is going to be in Boston this year. And
that's down.
Yeah. So let's get Boston, you know, part of ATA and push that. And it's going to be a fun time. Mm-hmm. And we'll promote that more on their show as we go. But we're with Iris Berman from Northwell Health, and she is an expert in telehealth. I tell you, what is so important about creating telehealth for patients who use telehealth? You know, what is the most important piece of telehealth for patients using it?
So I think, you know, making the assumption that everybody has access, first of all, to the technology, whether it's the hardware or the broadband, is something you need to be thinking about. One of the things we learned in COVID was a great accelerator of telehealth, but it also taught us a few things. We definitely saw areas of exclusion because there was no broadband available, and that forced people to have to leave their homes during times when it really wasn't safe for them to. So we have a diversity and inclusion department that really, and a population management department, you need to be working closely with them to understand your populations. And right now, I think that's the other thing that we kind of talked about is working with the providers, the broadband providers, not your health providers, around getting the broadband economically to the underserved. And those underserved are not just in rural areas. There are dead zones in cities where you cannot get a signal. And people can't always afford data plans. This is another conversation we've been having very recently, and something you should be having conversations with your representatives about is how do we get particularly the big players in that area to find an equitable way? We're trying to struggle with how do we get technology hardware out that doesn't break us, but also gets something reliable into the hands of the people that didn't have access to the hardware, and perhaps some kind of a data plan and an incentive, even the payers, the insurance covering agencies should be thinking about incentivizing or perhaps providing or working with the broadband providers to provide these data plans that are used exclusively for healthcare. And so that's some of the stuff that finally there's conversations beginning. There are grants out there from FCC to get, you know, broadband into areas. Be aware of those. If you are particularly in a rural area, there's a lot of funding out there now. A lot has been awarded already, but look at where it's going. Try to reach out. I believe you can, I don't have the bill in front of me, but, you know, there's avenues to research in terms of how to get that broadband coverage here. We don't want to, some of our most vulnerable patients, our sickest patients, are the ones that don't have the access to the broadband or the hardware.
We have heard that with school-based telehealth programs and using public libraries in Delaware. We've had Maureen Donovan from Haywood Healthcare out in Orange, Massachusetts, speak about their school-based telehealth program, and It's a wonderful program. They really have it sorted out for everyone and all their needs, especially behavioral health for these kids. They don't even have to leave the school. So the nurse's office has really become
multi-purpose.
Yes, so much. So what is the opportunity in the digital health market? They're projecting digital health to be $500 billion by 2025. That's just right around the corner. Medicaid data shows telehealth increased by 1,200% in the peak of the pandemic.
Yeah, I think we actually, if we do this right, you know, I like to say the expression, if we build, you remember Field of Dreams, if you build it, they will come. It was a line after the baseball field was built. I say, if you build it right, they will come. So you have to think holistically about the needs of your community. And I think one of the things you have to do is meet with your community leaders to say, what is it that you think your community needs? And then you look at your digital footprint, like I mentioned just earlier. What are the deficits? And you build from there. But one of the things I see really taking off, and we're very much involved in how we're going to evolve this, is remote patient monitoring and how it connects telehealth to an even more holistic experience in terms of both synchronous and asynchronous data. And that's actually going to help us, I think, to really understand even more so the impact. When you start measuring physical components like blood pressure, blood sugar, and this has been done, but it's been done fragmented, I think starting to provide it as a holistic care model is something we can learn from and build upon and really, really get patients. See, patients need to start, and this has been not a brand new philosophy, but more emphasized in the last few years, is that we need to own our own health.
Right.
Our doctors are part of our team. We're as a patient, if I am a patient, I am the commander of my health. And I can get informed, I can get self-feedback, I can reach out using telehealth and all of the other digital tools. You're talking about digital tools, that's not just telehealth, that is your RPM. I'm a diabetic. I am responsible for monitoring my own blood sugars. I have a glucometer that connects my phone and then goes to a support link. If I need support, it goes to that person. If I need escalation, it's built. Now, that's about the building of it, right? So it's not just about the shiny new toy. A lot of people know I like to say that a lot because a lot of people, they go, oh, look at that Bluetooth this or this Bluetooth telescope. And everybody buys it, but there's no plan around how are we going to take what we learn from that and really improve the overall patient experience and get the patient actively involved in what it is we're measuring so that they understand their trends. And that means that there's got to be a lot of health literacy around that too. So you start getting involved with your population management, your health literacy, and the digital components. If you do it in a silo, it will not succeed. It has to be holistic.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned health literacy and digital literacy. This is the other part that's stopping us from having health equity, right? Because if you don't know how to use your smartphone, you might get a lot of minutes, you might get the broadband access, but then if you don't know how to utilize it in order to be able to connect to a virtual visit, then you don't have equity at that point. So this is a really important point around telehealth and your talk about remote patient monitoring, how important that is. I would even take it to the next step, and I know you'll agree. Now we're headed to hospital at home. Now we've got, you know, patients who can leave the hospital a little earlier. They can have a heavier monitoring at home. Who doesn't want to be home earlier? I don't want to stay in the hospital any longer than I have to and have, you know, that nursing care. So that's all virtual health, all digital health mixed in there. And that's the evolution of healthcare. So for our listeners, that would mean, you know, your mom and dad, your aunts, your uncles, your family members that have chronic disease who are in the hospital could leave the hospital sooner with the support of clinicians coming into the home and monitoring them, managing them at home for those last few days that they would have normally been inside the hospital. Less cost for the patient, so much more convenient for some patients that have to travel long distances to get to their specialist or get to their care providers, depending on where they live. Even as you noted, even if you're in the city, that can be a long trip. You're not going to, you know, be able to get on the subway or whatever, you know, if you've got some chronic conditions, and certainly if you're needing to be home. Sorry, Joe. Again,
no, it applies. It applies urban and rural. But if myself, I do not like going to the hospital. And I know other men like myself. We just do not want to go to the hospital. I play in a hockey league. And you'll see someone with a laceration. And they're like, is it bad? Like,
no,
do I have to go to the hospital? I'm like, I hate to say this. You do have to go to the hospital. And then they look at you and they'll say, how many? And I'm like, oh, 8 to 10, maybe some wax. And they'll say, oh, I got it. Who's going to take me? Who's going to grab my gear? Who's going to call my wife? You know, and it's like, oh, my goodness. So
story related to telehealth on that, too. There's something called ET3, which Northwell is actively involved with Fidney Fire Department of New York. Where they're trying to keep people in their health homes, right? So yep. We do bring people into our health system if we need to, but we do have our own ambulance system, and they have, I will tell you, if you ever want to have a really interesting talk, I'll put you in touch with that department.
Yes,
too.
Please.
They do telehealth with their community paramedics and their paramedics, and they show up, you know, if there's a call, they're part of the 911 system now, and if they can, they respond. Now they may assess them using different tools and telehealth, which they have in your ambulance. And they also can come in with a pack and perform
yes.
a telehealth assessment in the home and determine and hopefully avoid that acute hospitalization and bring them to an appropriate level of care. And if they do need to be escalated, trying to bring them within their health home. So if they're, you know, there's a lot of big health system, good hospitals in New York. There's NYU, NYP. If we find out that they're in that system, they will, if they can possibly do it, and if time permits, from a safety standpoint, get them into their actual health home so they're being treated by providers who have access to their history, know their story, and improve continuity and prevent probably more unnecessary hospitalization. It's been really interesting. You know, there's some technology challenges in the city, as I mentioned earlier, but they're finding some really great stuff with that. And I think that's a great story to be told. So I would not be able to tell the entire story, but I'm really proud of them.
I know, and hospitals are at capacity. Hospitals are at capacity, or over capacity. So, you know, anything you can do to kind of divert some of that stuff away from the ER and do it yourself even better or easier or more inexpensive.
Patients want that too.
So it's just, I think this is a big breakthrough. Telehealth has been a huge asset during the PAG, and we've learned a lot. So we're talking with Iris Berman from Northwell Health. She is an expert, and we'll probably have her back this year to fill in some gaps. So thank you for your time tonight, Iris. Our show's goal is to bring our listeners educated and established doctors, nurses, and healthcare workers in to speak with us. We want to provide our listeners with the latest information in healthcare, not only locally, but on a national and regional level. If you're interested in learning more about Bluceris and the world of digital health, you can find this interview and more on our website at blue-cirrus.com. That's blue like the color, dash Cirrus, C-I-R-R-U-S, like the cloud.com. Thank you, Iris.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much. This was great, Iris. Thank you for your time. And it was great to share it.
Looking forward to talking again.
Yes, we will have you back. This is Friends with Benefits on WATD Radio 95.9 FM. We'll be right back.